Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Mental Toughness and Body Show. My name is Rob Evans, and I'm your weight loss coach, health strategist, and internationally published author, helping take your life and your business, your health, fitness, mindset, and body from where you are right now to where it is that you want to be. And in a moment, I'm going to introduce you to our fabulous guests today, all the way from America in Florida. It's Mr. Bob Berg, who is the co-author of this amazing book called The Go-Giver. Now, for over 30 years, Bob has been successfully showing entrepreneurs, leaders, and sales professionals how to communicate their value and accelerate their referral business. And although for years he's been known for his referral book, which is called Endless Referrals, it's his business parable that he co-authored with John David Mann called The Go-Giver that has really created this worldwide movement. The Go-Giver is a part of a four-part series, but The Go-Giver itself has sold more than 1 million copies and has been translated into now 30 languages. It's been rated within the top 10 most motivational books ever written and the 20 most highly rated sales books of all time. Bob Berg is such an incredible guest. You're going to get a great deal of content out of today. It's been a privilege to be able to speak with him. I hope you enjoy this interview. And Bob, you've created such an amazing story through The Go-Giver with John. And look, it's such an easy read. It's one of the, probably the first impactful books that I've read that I've really been able to absorb. So it's just resonated so well. It's such a beautiful story. Prior to us jumping into the five laws of stratospheric success, I wanted to just ask you, you're obviously the how-to person and John's a great storyteller. I was just wondering, how did the two of you come to work together to produce this magnificent piece?
He was the editor-in-chief of a magazine I used to write for. I used to write a monthly column, and John was the editor. He was the editor-in-chief, and every month he would edit my articles and always did such a great job. He was always very humble about it, though. He'd ask, is this okay? I moved this here. I did this. And I'd always respond back by emailing, John, you write my stuff better than I write my stuff. And we just got to be, good friends back and forth that way. I knew his reputation in his marketplace was as a fantastic writer, not just an editor, but he had ghostwritten a couple of very big selling industry related books. And so when I had the idea, the basic idea for The Go-Giver, I asked him if he would be the co-author and really the lead writer and storyteller. And fortunately, he agreed. And so we collaborated on it and he just did a fantastic job.
It's so, so fantastic. I wanted to ask you about, if you could tell us about what the five, different rules are, your laws of success. But prior to that, we think of go-giver. So that naturally says to me, okay, go-getter, go-giver. But I think with the go-getter, I guess it's a little bit different, isn't it? You've got the go-getter, they're opposites.
it seems like it would be the opposite. I think it always depends how you define a term or define a word. We like to say that, that we love go-getters because go-getters take action.
Yes.
Go-getters get things done, right?
Yes.
And we know, you could have the greatest ideas, the best thoughts, the nicest intent, but unless action's put into the mix, nothing's going to happen. Now, the good news is there really is no natural difference, if you will, no opposite between a go-getter and a go-giver. Many go-getters are also go-givers. We would say that every go-giver, though, is also a go-getter, a person of action. So we'd say the opposite of a go-giver is a go-taker. And that is the person who feels almost entitled, if you will, to take without having added value to the process, to the person, to the situation. It's the title go-giver is sort of a wordplay, if you will, of go-getter, which is the more more well-known term.
Yeah. So maybe, would you like to tell us about the five laws? Because I think those are brilliant.
Oh, thank you. Well, they're based on a premise, if you will. And the premise of the Go-Giver is simply that shifting your focus, and this is really where it all begins, shifting your focus from getting to giving. And when we say giving in this context, we simply mean constantly and consistently providing immense value to others, understanding yes. that doing so is not only a more pleasant way of conducting business, it's actually the most financially profitable way as well. And not for any kind of way out there, woo-woo type of magical, mystical reasons. It actually makes very, very rational, very logical and practical sense. Because when you think about it, when you're that person who can take your focus off of yourself and place it on serving others, discovering what they need, what they want, what they desire, when you can move your focus off yourself and place it on helping other people solve their challenges and problems, when you can focus on helping people get closer to happiness, if you will, people feel good about you. They yes. want to get to know you. They like you. Yes. They trust you. They want to be in relationship with you. They want to do business with you if that's appropriate, but they definitely want to tell others about you, to be your personal walking ambassador. So that's really the premise upon which the five laws are then built.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point, because I know for many years when I first started my business, I thought, how do I get more people in? How do I get more people in? What's that next marketing strategy? And that's, I'll try this and I'll try that. But I always struggled to hit my monthly targets. But when it changed was when I said, hang on, I'm coming at this the wrong way. This isn't a price thing, but it is a value thing. And I need to put my focus on what value can I bring this other person? Not what value can they bring to me.
Great point.
What value can I bring to them? And then everything started to change.
Well, you know, it's so interesting you say that. It's really a brilliant point, because I like to say that nobody's going to buy from you because you have a quota to meet.
Yeah, that's right.
They're not going to buy from you because you have your personal goals. They're not going to buy from you because you need the money. And they're not even going to buy from you just because you're a really nice person.
Yes.
They're going to buy from you only because they believe that they will be better off by doing so than by not doing so. And that's great news for the entrepreneur or salesperson who's willing to, again, take that focus off themselves and yes. place it on that other person and focus on their interests.
Yes.
So the laws that you asked about, the five laws, the laws of value, compensation, influence, authenticity, and receptivity, as you said, it really begins with value. The law of value says your true worth, in the business sense, of course, your true worth is determined by how much more you give in value than you take in payment. Now, that yes. doesn't mean you don't make a profit. Go-givers make a great profit because you're selling on high value rather than low price. What it does mean that along with just the intrinsic value you're providing to someone, also the entire customer experience.
Yes.
Altogether, everything brings them such a magnificent experience, such immense value that they have received more value than what they paid for. While, yeah. of course, you also make a very healthy profit. In any market-based exchange, there should always be two profits, the buyer profits and the seller profits, because both of them come away better off afterwards than they were beforehand. And that's yeah. basically the law of value.
Yeah, beautifully said. Can I just ask you, what would you say to those people that say, I'm going to compete on price?
Well, you know, you can do that. You certainly can, but I don't think it's a very productive way to do business. Unless you're Amazon.com or, somebody who low price is their unique selling proposition. They do it well, they do it on huge scale. That's very difficult though. For most of us, we can't do that and survive very long. For when you sell on low price, okay, you're a commodity. Right. Yes. When you sell on high value, you're a resource.
Yes.
So, you know, all things being equal, I'd rather you be a, you know, higher than the average price and be able to communicate immense value. That way your business is, first of all, it's a lot more fun. It's a lot more rewarding. It's a lot more profitable. It's also a lot more sustainable.
Yes.
Because you're seen as a value-based entrepreneur.
Yeah, beautiful. Perhaps tell us about the law of compensation. So I know that's the next one.
Mm-hmm. So this one says your income is determined by how many people you serve and how well you serve them. So where law number one says to give more in value than you take in payment, law number two tells us that the more people whose lives you touch with the exceptional value you provide, the more money with which you'll be rewarded. Nicole Martin, the CEO in the story, explained to Joe, the protege, that the law of value represents your potential income. The law of compensation represents your actual income. Why? Because it's not enough to just serve one person, regardless of how exceptional that your value is. Your income really has to do with impact. How many lives you're able to impact with that value. So we would say exceptional value plus significant reach equals very high compensation.
So with your observations that people spend enough time identifying who their true audience is?
I think it depends upon the person and the business, but I think a lot of people don't. And I think it's so very important, because when you can really narrow that down, when you can come up with your avatar, as they call it, you know, that perfect customer, right? That person who, now, of course, the tendency is to say, well, but anybody could be helped with this, or aren't I limiting myself by focusing on just one type, you know, one demographic or psychographic or whatever. Actually, it's paradoxical, but the more specific you are, actually, the more successful you'll be, not only because you'll become an expert and well-known in that niche, but when you focus like that, it naturally expands outward.
Yes. Yeah, I noticed when I first started my business, it's like, you just want to take anyone when you first start. So you go wide and you're like, you want to be everything to everyone. But then when I came back to identifying that value for myself and making more of a contribution to others, I found that I had a specific niche and I needed to go really deep down that channel. And
you become the authority in that field.
That's right. And that's really, shone out for me. So the third law, the law of influence, tell us a bit about that.
Well, this one says your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first. Now, this one, you know, just like law number one, this sounds kind of counterintuitive, almost counterproductive. Place the other person's interest first. How will I be more influential that way? And yet, the greatest leaders we know, the top influencers, the most sustainably successful sales professionals and entrepreneurs, the highest money earning entrepreneurs. This is how they run their lives and conduct their businesses. They're always looking out for the other person's interests.
Yes.
Now, let me qualify this because this can be very easily misunderstood, and I think it's very important. When we say place the other person's interests first, we certainly don't mean you should be anybody's doormat or a martyr or self-sacrificial in any way. Absolutely not at all. It's simply understanding, as Joe, the protege in the story, learned from several of the mentors, the golden rule of business, of sales, what have you, is that all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like and trust.
Yeah.
And there's no faster, more powerful, or more effective way to elicit those feelings toward you from others than by genuinely moving from what we call an I focus or me focus to an other focus.
Yeah.
Or as Sam advised Joe, making your win all about the other person's win. When you develop that reputation as that person, you become that sphere of influence in your community, in your market. You become that go-to person.
Yeah, that's really beautifully articulated. I was interested in, you know, we hear the term influencer these days thrown around so loosely. And I just wonder on what your perspective here is, because I see that there are those influencers out there that don't have a very good influence that wouldn't necessarily satisfy this law, but people call them influencers. I was just wondering if you had a view on that.
Yeah, well, you know, like anything else, there are always the definitions that the marketplace gives certain words. And in, you know, as you said, the term influence or influencer has been not only overused, but has been, you know, taken to a different level in a sense, where we think of the influencer now as that person on social media who has so many followers or so many real fans that they can be paid to promote a product or a service and so forth. And they're influencers. When you think of, by definition, influence is simply the ability to move a person or persons to a desired action, yes, usually within the context of a specific goal. Now, you know, we've always had influencers, the TV spokespeople, right?
Yes.
You know, why has an athlete been paid to promote some product that has nothing to do with sports?
Yes.
Because people like them. They believe that they can, those athletes or actors or what have you, can influence, you know, others to
a huge audience. Yes.
Yeah. I remember the old TV commercial that had a very famous actress selling aspirin. Well, she's not a doctor. She wasn't a doctor. She didn't claim to be. In fact, she said she's not a doctor.
Yeah.
But of course, people loved her. So if she said, I'll buy this aspirin, well, of course, that's it. That's being an influencer. It's just that now the medium is a little different. So I kind of wish that wasn't the word that was used, but it is. So, you know.
Yeah. But I really love this next law of authenticity. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, the law of authenticity says the most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself. And in this part of the story, Deborah Davenport, the mentor at this part, was giving a speech, and she pointed out something that made a big difference for her in her career. And that is that all the skills in the world, the sales skills, technical skills, people skills, as important as they are, and they are indeed very, very important, they're also all for naught if you don't come at it from your true authentic core.
Yes.
But when you do, when you, as we like to say, show up as yourself day after day, week after week, month after month, people feel very comfortable with you.
Yes.
They feel very good about you. They feel very safe with you. And why wouldn't they? They know who they're getting, right? They know who they're getting. It's that same person. You know, we've all known people who were one way one day, and the next time you saw them, totally different. They were the nicest, sweetest, warmest, fantastic person. When next time you see them, they were a monster, right? You almost wish they were a monster all the time, because at least then you'd know what to expect. We, as human beings, we value consistency.
Yes.
And great point. Part of authenticity is consistency. It's knowing who that person is. So, you know, obviously, I think being authentic is a very helpful in doing business. And we said, well, so why are so many people not authentic in business? And we tend to think, well, because they're dishonest, or they're trying to pull one over on us, or they're, well, it's a big world. There's certainly lots of people. We need to understand that. But I don't think that's usually the case. You know, Rob, I got to tell you, I believe that 99% of the time, when people show up inauthentically, it's really nothing more than the fact that they don't have the self-confidence.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Show up. Yeah. They don't recognize or embrace what they really have to offer. I believe there are two types of value that we have. One is intrinsic value. Just by being here, we bring value to the table. But we also have what I call market value. And I define market value as that combination of strengths, traits, talents, and characteristics that allow a person to add value, bring value, give value to others, to individuals, to the marketplace, in such a way that they are financially rewarded for it. Now, we all have these, Mike Littman coined the term assets of value. Now, some people are just great. They're fantastic with one thing, but most of us aren't. Most of us aren't, you know, we don't have the ultimate skill that certain, But most of us have several skills that we're pretty good at.
Yes.
And we can combine those skills. Dilbert creator Scott Adams, in one of his books, he calls them he calls it a talent stack. We can actually stack those different talents, traits, characteristics in order and combine them in order to bring great value. The problem is that as human beings, we're so emotionally close to ourselves, we often can't recognize the greatness, the value that we have within us.
Yeah, that's
why having
point.
A coach like yourself, that's like, you know, why having someone who can help you figure that out, because we just can't necessarily do that.
Yes.
You know, ourselves. It takes someone who can look at us dispassionately, right? Who can and is able to help us to recognize and embrace those strengths. I also think with authenticity that it's another one of those words that's a little bit misunderstood. I think sometimes people think of authentic as not having any boundaries, saying whatever you want to say. You know, yes. This is just the way I am. If you don't yes. like it, well, who cares? You can win. And by the way, that's a good philosophy to have if you don't want to have any good relationships and you want to be pretty much broke. Okay. Yeah. But since yeah. that's not how most of us would like to be, no, that's not authenticity. You know, on a very basic level, authenticity is simply acting congruently with your values.
Yeah.
It
yeah,
doesn't mean you just, it yeah. doesn't mean you're rude or impolite or take it or leave, you know, and so forth. You know, it's sort of like the person who says, well, I have anger issues and I yell at people a lot. And if I were to act differently, that wouldn't be authentic of me. And that's right. Come on. You know, that what it means is this person has an authentic problem
yeah.
that this person needs to authentically work on yeah. in order to become a better, higher, more effective, authentic version of themselves. So, you know, we like to say, don't use authenticity as an excuse for not growing. Use it as impetus or motivation for stepping into your highest self.
Yeah, I like the way that you've brought that about and talking about the values and so forth, because over my left shoulder here on my wall, a number of years ago, probably about 5 years ago, I went through a process and said, what are my values and beliefs? What are, you know, what's really at my core, trying to work out how do I help bring out my authentic self? Because I was trying to be other people. I thought, who was successful in my field? Oh, let me do what they do. But then finding that I wasn't really bringing out my true self and true value to other people. And it wasn't until I, again, started to realize who I really was and dig really deep that's when the authentic me started to emerge. So I think you've articulated that really well.
Well, you know what I think a lot of people do these days, because we live in that the age of the, you know, self-proclaimed or other proclaimed guru, right, that has it all and they stand up there. First of all, we got to realize that those people standing up there, they have their own problems as well. They're just really good at a certain, you know, thing. But so the feeling is, well, if I can just be them, right,
yes.
then I'll have all the success that yes. they have. Now, here's the thing. We can learn from everyone. By all means, learn their principles, learn you know, their strategies, learn their value, learn the things, learn from everyone, but don't try to be them.
Yes, be you.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, learn from everyone, but stay true to your authentic core.
Yeah, well said. Now, law number five, this one really opened my eyes. So tell us about this
Thank
one.
You. Well, I agree with you. I think this is the one that kind of brings it all home, right? Mm. And it's the law of receptivity. And the law of receptivity says the key to effective giving is to stay open to receiving. Well, what does this mean? Really nothing more than understanding that, sure, you breathe out. Well, you've also got to breathe in.
Yes.
Right? It's not one or the other. We breathe out carbon dioxide. We breathe in oxygen. We breathe out, which is giving. We breathe in, which is receiving. Giving and receiving are not opposite concepts. Giving and receiving are simply two sides of the very same coin.
Yeah, well said.
And they work
yes.
together in tandem. Now, the challenge is the messages we get from the world around us. You know, I don't know how it is in the beautiful land down under here in the States, that, you know, people who make a lot of money are sort of vilified. You know, yes. People are looked at as, oh, what did they do to get that? And who yes. did they rip off? And who did they build on the backs of other? Well, it's a big world. So there are people who do bad things. But by and large, assuming you're in a basically free market-based economy, meaning no one has to buy from you.
Yes.
Okay. The only way you can earn a lot of money is to provide a lot of value to a lot of people, placing yeah. their interests first, coming at it authentically, and then being willing to receive. But when we get all these horrible messages of lack and anti-prosperity and anti-abundance and anti-money, and it serves no one. But yes. what it does is it gets into people's heads. It gets into the unconscious. And then people start, you know, unconsciously rejecting prosperity. You know, what will my friends think of me if I have a lot of money? Will they think now I'm not honest, or that I've changed, yes. or that I'm this, or that? So I think it's a real kind of counterproductive message. And I for this reason, I think we need to study prosperity. And fortunately, there are some really good people out there who they speak, they blog, they post, they write, they do videos, they have book, you know, where they just really dig deep into prosperity and prosperity mindset. And, you know, really 99% of what they talk about is the inner game. It's yes. being able to keep those horrible anti-prosperity messages, you know, dissipate them, so that we can really step into our true, prosperous essence. And so, you know, we like to say again, you know, it's not, are you a giver or a receiver? No, you're a giver and a receiver.
Yes.
But what you know is that the giving comes first. This is just a law of life. It's a law of nature. We plant before we harvest. We sow before we reap. We give before we receive.
Yes.
We do, though, you know, we give value to all, and we need to allow ourselves to gratefully receive.
Yes. Yeah. Really, really well said. Bob, would you say, is there anyone, I know this is a tough question, it's a bit like saying, which is your favorite child, but is there any one law that you can see is more important than another? Or maybe whether it's to you personally, or I know that they kind of all work together.
Yeah, but I think it would be difficult to leave out any of the laws and still be nearly as successful. I think any of the laws by themselves will get you a few, you know, a little bit along the way. But, you know, if you leave out any of them, it just can't work. Imagine doing everything but leaving out receptivity.
Yes.
You know, imagine leaving out value. Well, nobody's going to do business with you if they don't find value, you know. I mean, but I'd say this, I'd say we all probably have our laws that we relate to more than
anything. Yeah, that's a good point.
We find more natural to tap into.
Yes.
And those that we find least, right? You know, I would say with mine, the law of influence is probably the one I relate to the most.
Right.
It's just, you know, it's very natural for me to be able to really focus on how I can, you know, help another person grow. I think by nature, yes. I'm an encourager. I'm yes. a connector. You know, I'm someone who wants to, you know, so it's just congruent with my values.
Yeah.
But so that would probably be mine, but I've heard other people, you know, mention all the other different laws as being the one they relate to most.
Yeah. Well, personally, it's hard to step away from value, but influence as well, because they're probably my favorite, but then I say, oh, well, I really like authenticity. So it's hard to separate them. And the receptivity one is probably one that really changed me, because I was always one from, if somebody wanted to give something to me, outside of a transactional type thing, because I'd added so much value, it's like, oh no, don't do that. But then I realized it's a bit like Santa Claus, you know, you feel so good yourself when you add so much value to somebody that you've got to be open yourself. So I do love that.
It's interesting too, because, you know, if people say, how do I begin to really build my sense of receptivity? You know, it can be as simple as when someone pays you a compliment, instead of saying, oh, no, just saying, well, thank you so much.
Yeah, that's right.
When someone offers to pour your coffee, you know, it's like, oh, thank you, I appreciate that, or holds a door open for you, thank you.
Yes, appreciate, yeah, you know, yeah, well.
And building on those small successes.
Yes. Yeah. Beautiful. Now, we've just got a couple of minutes left, Bob. So I just wanted to ask you a couple of other questions. Obviously, The Go-Giver is a book in a series of four. So would you like to tell us a little bit about the other three books?
Sure. Well, so of the four books, again, co-authored with John David Mann, who's just fantastic, and the lead writer, three of them are parables. Yes. The Go-Giver is a parable. Now, the second book in the series, Go-Givers Sell More, that's more of an application guide to the Go-Giver.
Right.
So it's a bit more how-to in nature. Then the third book in the series, the second parable, is the Go-Giver Leader. And then the fourth book, third parable, is the Go-Giver Influencer. That's probably my favorite book in the series. And that one is really all about people's skills. It's you know, how to effectively deal with or work with others, even difficult people, in such a way that not only does everyone come away better off than they were before, but the other person feels genuinely good about themselves, about situation, and about you. And I, you know, Rob, I really believe that people's skills is the differentiator. You know, between the reasonably successful, the legitimately successful person, and that person who really is able to reach huge levels. Because who are we really dealing with? Other humans, you know, all the time.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well said. Now, we're going to tell people at the end how they can get a copy of all of these books. So I wanted to ask you, what's the best advice you've ever received from someone?
I think it was probably close to 40 years ago when I had just been in sales for a couple of years. I had done fairly well after a rough start because I'd started reading books and listening and going to seminars and doing well, but I went to work for another company and I was in a sales slump and it was very frustrating. And a gentleman who worked at the company, he wasn't even in the sales department. He was, I think, an engineer. And I think he saw me sort of as Joe in the story, right? That I write about years and years later. He saw me as that kind of up and young, ambitious, up and coming, hardworking, really going after it, but focused on myself and very, very frustrated.
Yes.
And he was a nice guy. And he took me, he said, Berg, he was a last name kind of guy. He said, Berg, can I give you some advice? I said, absolutely. Please do. I need it. And he said, if you want to make a lot of money in sales, he said, don't have making money as your target. Your target, he said, is serving others. Now, when you hit the target, you'll get a reward. And that reward will come in the form of money. And you can do with that money whatever you choose. But never forget, he said, the money is simply the reward for hitting the target.
Yes.
Right? And the target is serving others.
Yeah.
And that is, I think, what really said to me, great salesmanship is never about the salesperson.
Yes.
Right? Great salesmanship is never about the product or service, as important as those are. But that great salesmanship is about the other person. It's about that person whose life you're choosing to add value to. It's really, when you think about it, it's about another person's life being better just because
you're in it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Beautiful, beautiful. Now, I just got a couple more questions. What would be, you would say, the greatest lesson you've learned from your biggest failure? I know that that's a bit of a tough one because
that's an easy one. With all the mistakes I've made, and I've made a lot of them, I'd like to think I've learned from most of them, probably not all of them. But I think the biggest one was that change was something I was going to have to accept and go with, whether I wanted to or not. Because I know in the personal development space, they always say, oh, embrace change. Change is great. Change. Well, I don't like change. I like to get really, really good at something, have it going on a roll, systemize it, work it, and not change. But that's not life. Life is change. And so,
COVID's taught us that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so, you know, this was many years ago when I first started my speaking career, and I had to start all over again because my refusal to change, I lost most of my clients. That was a big lesson. So I learned that, you know, you don't have to like change. You just have to be willing to do it if you want the results.
Yes. Now, I can't leave this conversation with you. You probably heard my cat in the background meowing like crazy, but I can't leave you without asking you about your passion for furry friends adoption and clinics. So tell us a little bit about that, and you've got to tell me about what pets you've got.
Yeah, no, I hear your cat in the background, and it brings a smile to my face. They're wonderful. In fact, the GoGiver influencer, two of the featured players are a cat and a dog.
Oh, right. I haven't read that one.
And so, I love animals. So I they're just a big part of my life. And I have none now. I lost my cat about a year ago, passed away from having a brain tumor, unfortunately. Then I've been fostering cats for an organization. And so it's a great organization. I'm one of their foster families. And so when they have two or three cats at a time, they have a whole bunch of people in their network, and we take care of them and so forth till they're ready to be spayed and neutered and then found a home for. And, you know, it's an honor to be part of that organization.
Yeah, wonderful. That's a nice thing. And so when you lose a pet, it's like losing a part of your family, isn't it, when you've had them for so long? Yeah. Look, Bob, today it has been such an honor to speak with you. It's like kind of like a dream come true, really, reading your book and now being able to speak with you. Thank you for your, along with John, your valuable contribution to the world. I mean, you've sold over 1 million copies of this. That must just make you want to jump out of bed each morning if you don't want to get out of bed. Say, oh, look at this book. It's sold over 1 million. People want to hear my story. It's been a true honor to speak with you today. If people want to get in touch with you, grab a copy of your book, best place for them to do that?
Yeah, burg.com. And they can scroll down to where they can get a free chapter or excerpt so they can read it first to see if they like what they see. Then they can always click through.
Just buy it. That's the tip. Just buy it. Bob, thanks so much. It's been an honor speaking with you.
Oh, Rob, the honor is mine. Thank you so much.
Thank you.